Hi, and welcome back to the Prepare Podcast. This month, I'm asking our February guests the same series of questions. Two women in ministry, two different perspectives. First, you'll hear from Lieutenant Colonel Patty Richardson, the Divisional Director of Women's Ministries in the Northern Division. We hope you enjoy hearing from her experience as a young kid from Omaha finding her place and calling in Christ, to now, along with her husband, the first African-American divisional commanders in the Central Territory, a responsibility Colonel Patty does not take lightly. We hope you enjoy this episode. All right, Lieutenant Colonel Patty Richardson, welcome to the Prepare Podcast.
Thank you very much.
Now, the Prepare Podcast is a podcast produced by the Salvation Army Territorial Women's Ministries Department, and it is a podcast where we meet with women of faith and in ministry to learn from their experience and wisdom to help prepare and equip us listeners in our faith pursuits and callings. So we intentionally asked you to come on to our podcast as a guest in February, and you are a divisional commander, DDWM.
WM, yeah. Right, yeah. Divisional Director of Women's Ministries, correct.
Good. Okay, that's the formal introduction of who you are. But so I'm going to ask you to introduce us to who is Patty.
Oh, wow. I'm a spouse. I'm a mom, three grown sons, probably more fun now, a grandma of two young granddaughters. You know, just a simple kid from Omaha, Nebraska, who would have never thought that saying yes to God would put me where I am today. Just amazed and grateful to be a child of God.
Yeah. Well, let's go back to that moment that when you became a child of God. When did you first become a Christian?
We were always churched. We did not always go to the army. My mom took us primarily, and we went to another denomination, Church of God in Christ. But she also worked with a lady who was the YPSM at the Omaha South Corps. And we started going to the Army because of Bible school. We were invited to Bible school. And that's back when Bible school was 14 days and you had two-week sections. You know, we don't do it quite that long now. And I think those were my early days of really understanding that while I went to church, I still could have a relationship with Christ. And giving and I could give my heart to Christ. So I think it was during those times that I could probably come back to that. So I probably was, 10, 11 years old, right around in there somewhere, yeah.
So after that, did you, because obviously later on, at some point, you decided to become an officer. So did you, I'm guessing after that salvation moment, you kind of stuck with the Salvation Army for some time?
Yeah, we went to the Army, I think, primarily because of the youth programming. Some of the other little churches that went to didn't have the youth programming at all, and certainly not to the extent that the Army had and has. We would go to the Army, and a lot of times we would go to the Army for Sunday school and morning worship, and then maybe we would leave and go to something she was more comfortable with. But we were able to stay with the Army, and we went through the program is guards and the sunbeams and guards, and back then, showing my age now, directory, which was kind of like young people's corps cadets, and going through those programs, moving into my teens. And it probably was in my teens at a youth council out in North Platte, Nebraska, where I first heard God speak to me about the possibility of being an officer.
So how long till after that point did that did that happen for you?
Probably another 6 years or so, because I was in my mid-teens and I didn't go to training until my early 20s. So, yeah. But and during that time, I had the opportunity to work as a Corps helper. I was involved in our Corps, but then I was able to go to another Corps in a division and work as a Corps helper for a year. And I think that just really helped solidify in my own heart and mind that this is what God was calling me to do.
Now, is there a ministry over the years that you have been consistently drawn to? And if so, why is that?
I think one of the things that's been very prominent in my life has been music. So I was thinking about that, probably a music ministry. I remember even while we were attending these other churches, playing the piano and doing some singing there. I had an opportunity to do it in the Corps, but I was doing it actually some prior to coming to the Army. And that has always been, I believe, how God has allowed me to be used to help to speak to others. There's something special, at least in my heart, about music ministry that helps move us from wherever we happen to be in at that moment, actually into the presence of God, where we can hear God. I mean, music just has the ability to speak to people and to get down in your heart, if you will, and down into your soul in a way that a lot of things can't. And so music, and so being able as a Corps officer to do different things, we wrote little plays and little musicals, and we did things to help the kids relate to Christ, but relate to what God had for them, and in a way to speak to them. We actually did it for adults too. So I would say for me, music ministry would be the thing.
Now, as a divisional director of women's ministries, that's very much on your radar on a day-to-day basis. And you've been in this kind of position for, I mean, you're in Northern now, you were in Midland before. So this is just, women's ministries is just a part of your daily work. So from that experience, from your past and present, is there something that you feel is missing from women's ministries that you'd like to see added to the mission of women's ministries?
I think the mission of women's ministries is on point. I think where a lot of Corps struggle is sometimes having the programming being relevant. I love the concept of focus groups. I was really glad to see that come along, because that allows for tailoring and crafting and evolving a program around the needs of women for that particular point in time. And if that doesn't work, then you tweak it and you try to do something else. I think the thing that always comes to my mind is relevance. You know, is the programming we're doing really relevant? We have an interesting situation that a lot of our traditional home league and women's ministries programs really do involve older women. And while that's certainly an important ministry, I think sometimes we've struggled to be really relevant to younger working moms, because, you know, after you've done all day work, sometimes going to the Corps in the evening is probably not the first thing that's on your mind when you get home. You got to do dinner, you got to do all that stuff, and now I got to get dressed and go to the Corps. And so one of the things I've always thought about, and I've tried to encourage Corps officers, is to work to make your program something that people will want to exchange their time for. So it's a good exchange for my time. So if I go, I'm glad I came, because I got something that was worth my while for whatever trouble it took me to get to the program. And so, you know, working to be relevant. And I also like, for a while, you may recall that we tinkered with junior women's ministries and the younger girls. I think we were looking at 14, 15. We've kind of played with that. But I've encouraged the Corps officers to maybe look at doing something like that. And their focus group programming may look certainly different from somebody who's 50 years old. And that's okay, too. And so maybe we have a focus group around computer coding and programming. Maybe we have a focus group around something else that really is particular to them and is interesting to them. Maybe it's a STEM program. I don't know. But that's something that will make it something that they want to be a part of. And so the mission of changing women's lives and impacting women's lives for Christ, that's on point. We just want to continue to make sure our methodologies of doing that are ones that are attractive and that are effective.
Have you seen any core from your current division or our previous ones have some success in that?
Yeah, I think some have. They have worked with, we have a core now that's trying to work specifically with the older teenage girls, the ones that are 15, 16, 17, 18, right around in there, and trying to do some programming for them. We saw some in our previous division where they were trying to do some more innovative things, some more meaningful, for lack of a better word yet this morning, some very meaningful and effective programming. One core we did a focus group, and part of the focus group was actually the ladies getting their Safe Serve certificate and finishing that. So then you could take that certificate and it may help you get a job and move into whether in some food service or some food prep opportunity. So giving them that training, taking that training, and that became the focus group. So I think there are things that we can do like that. We just have to be continue to try to be a little more creative in those things.
Yeah. And this next question you might have already answered a bit. And as a divisional commander, you have a pretty wide sphere of influence. So, but the question is if anything, how do you plan to elevate this addition or this, you spoke on relevancy. How do you plan to elevate this in your sphere of influence?
Well, I think we talk about it a lot. We talk about it when we visit the core. We talk about it when we do our women's ministries reviews. And that's just something that we have just continually talked about, even in our STEPS visits, is how can you create this programming in a way that will be relevant. And so I think just continuing to bring that to the forefront. And, and that's not only exclusive to women's ministries. I think it's exclusive to our programming as well. We want our programming to be effective. We want our programming to be compelling, so that people come, whether they come to Core Cadets, or whether they come to Women's Ministries, whether they come to Guards and Sunbeams, whether they come to Men's Club. We want it to be compelling, and because we are competing with the society that has a lot of things that vying for your attention. And so how can we not necessarily compete, but how can we have something that is meaningful so that people say, yeah, I still got all this other stuff that draws my attention, but there's something in this programming that speaks to a need inside of me that these other things can't do. So it's something that speaks to my soul.
I like the way you had said, I'm going to reword it, or I'm going to not word it correctly, but about the time, like this was a good use of your time, or like return. How did you word that?
A good exchange for your time. Yes.
That's good. And that's a good way to view it. You, just reading through your bio, getting to know you on that level, I noticed that you have your undergraduate degree and your master's degree. So I was wondering, how has higher education been an asset to your growth as an officer and minister of the gospel?
First and foremost, I saw it as an investment in myself and my own personal development. The Army gives us opportunities, you finish training college and now you have the opportunity to minister to people. They put you somewhere and you have an opportunity to do that. But I think an investment in my own self too was important. So first and foremost, I saw it as that. I have found that has challenged, it challenges the way you think. It challenges your thought process about a situation, maybe helps expand how you view things in a larger scale and how you can take those down and whether you need to contextualize them and make them work in a way where you can, where it benefits what you do. And so I think being able to process and to think and to plan and to organize has just helped add more structure to the things that I do in my work. So, and again, the investment in myself, I felt it necessary for me to do that. So I felt like I was offering the best person to be an officer that I could.
Mm-hmm. Remind me what your degrees are in.
Organizational leadership.
So going, that's a good segue into the level you're at. You and your husband are the first African-American divisional commanders in the Central Territory. And what were the, you shared some other statistics with me about you, yeah, the national statistics.
Yeah, there are two other African-American divisional commanders, one other African-American divisional director of women's ministries, both obviously serving in another territory.
Now, the question is, with that, what can the Salvation Army do to leverage opportunity and recruitment of leaders in a way that gives equal representation?
That is such a difficult question, because I think that's something that I know current territorial administration is struggling with. I think as we spent years as Corps officers, there may have been times where we felt like we were not valued necessarily for who we are and what we could bring to the Salvation Army. I think there were many times that the Army thought it was colorblind, but yet we didn't understand or appreciate, and I'm not sure the word, for the diversity that existed even back, you know, when I was a lieutenant and a young captain in those days that we had in the division, how important it was to hear those voices. Case in point, now we've gotten better at it, but for a long time, when you would see Salvation Army publications, whether it was a war cry or whatever it was, service providers, those people who were pictured as giving service and doing the work of the Salvation Army, were not people of color, but the service recipients were people of color. And being able to reflect to, I mean, the War Cry is a public publication, is a public thing. And so being able to reflect to everyone that there's a place of service for everyone, that wasn't being shown in our own publications. We weren't showing that, yes, there's a place for me, there's a place for you to do service and to find a place to worship and to find a place and a church community to belong to. That wasn't there. And so I think, you know, we've had various and sundry iterations of the multicultural department that we have now. If you go back and do a little history, it's come through several changes and revamps. And I think we're getting better at understanding we need to embrace the diversity of our communities. Our headquarters need, the people who work at our headquarters, the people who serve on our headquarters, need to reflect the diversity of our communities. And it's difficult because there are not a lot, When I was a young teen, when I was a teenager and we were going to the Army, I think I was probably 13 or 14 years old before I'd ever seen an African-American officer. And so until that point, there was never any thought in my mind that maybe I could do that. Maybe I could be a Salvation Army officer. Maybe I could work with the kids and do these kinds of things. And so what I guess a long way around is saying, I think the things we have to continue to do is make it possible for as many people who can join us as possible to come in and to worship, whether we do it in the Hispanic community, whether it's in the African American community. Yes, there are differences in our worship. Some ways, we spend some time in a Black church, and the way a Black church worships is a little different than our traditional Salvation Army. We stick very closely to that, and that certainly has relevance and importance. But being open in our worship and being open in our liturgy, we don't change the non-negotiables of who we believe Jesus Christ to be, of who and what we understand of God. Those things don't change. There are people I believe will join us, but we have to demonstrate, and I don't know how to do it. We don't have the answer to that. If I come up with that answer, that's a $6 million question. But showing that we are open to you coming and worshiping with us and that we are truly stronger in our diversity, whether it's in worship, whether it's in service, than we are what we now are. It's certainly not where we should be. None of us are where we should be, but we are coming along from where we used to be. It's a process. I can't tell you that there have been days where we have been embraced. There have been times when people were probably not good representatives of Christ because of who we were, but that's okay because we're going to continue on to being what God has called us to be. And I think we can get there as an organization. I think it may take us a while, but I think we can get there.
It connects right back to what you said about those, what might be missing from women's ministries. The relevancy is something we have to be aware of. So even in, here's an example or that something just came to mind. Tasha Morrison, who was one of the guests at Arise and Shine, her ministry is called Be the Bridge. It's about racial reconciliation. And she said to me, you know, I love working with the Salvation Army. I love it when I come into the Salvation Army because it's one of the most diverse denominations. So we are not lacking at all as a denomination in terms of racial diversity. But it comes back to the, like you said, when you were 14 years old, that was maybe the first time you'd seen an African-American officer. So you finally saw someone that looked like you and it maybe unlocked some things in your heart of, hey, I could do this too.
Right.
So it's how in our worship, in our different ministries, going back to what is relevant to keep drawing people in and giving them a vision for themselves as children of God, themselves as potential leaders in our church.
Right.
I think you made a great point about relevancy.
Right. And I think, too, you know, making sure that the folks that we do have, and we have a lot of core that have diverse congregations, is to see the potential in people. You know, we are all looking for candidates to join us in officership, and it may take some work with those people, but what investing can we begin to do in some of those people to bring them along maybe in 3 or 4 or 5 years where they too can feel like I'm to the point where I can be a Salvation Army officer. I think one of the most laudable steps I've seen the territory take is the Hispanic track at Training College. What a wonderful way to recognize the fact that that is an important thing to do. And the people that we will be able, we have no idea how many people we will be able to reach for Jesus Christ because we've sent people through that track and they're going to get out, they're going to get commissioned, they're going to work. We have no concept to how many people are going to be able to do that. And so if we can find other ways to do that, and as people come in our doors, whether they come for social services, whether they come through Pathway of Hope, can we find ways to say, yes, we want you to be a part of us. We want you to belong. And we believe God has a future for you. And it may even be as a Salvation Army officer.
Now, I want to go back to the point of you and your husband being the first African-American divisional commanders in the Central Territory. Can you just share from your experience of what that was like for you?
I think when the news came, I was shocked. Couldn't believe that was going to be that was the next step. I think for me, I think I could speak for my husband. Well, I think there continues to be this overwhelming sense of responsibility because as an officer, you have that anyhow. You have this sense of responsibility when they appoint you to a corps that you are the person who's responsible for their spiritual well-being. You are the one that's going to, you know, help disciple them and evangelize and do all those things that people do. And so, you know, that's a responsibility that weighs on our hearts, as I think it should. This was almost one of those things where it felt like you were carrying the weight of a people on your shoulders. I don't necessarily think anybody put it there, but you just have that sense that that's there because now you're you're doing something that nobody else has been in a place to do before. And you feel like, yeah, all eyes are on you and they're going to see what you do and they're going to evaluate what you're going to do and they're going to judge what you do. And so, yeah, it sometimes feels like a very weighty thing, but then you kind of get down into the weeds of just every day working with the Corps and working with the Corps officers. And you don't really think about that. You just get down in there and just kind of do what you need to do because you want the Army to progress wherever you happen to be and the work that needs to be done. And so you can forget about that. But some days it just kind of comes flooding back, at least in my own mind. And I think the thing with that is it really just continues to remind you of the need for our dependence on God to be able to do this, because there's certainly nothing in ourselves that we can do, but it's what God has placed us and equips us to do.
Last question. Where do you want to see the Salvation Army in 10 years?
I would like to see the Army be at the forefront of not only things like disaster services, maybe even more so in social services, but be the organization that this generation understands makes a difference in people's lives, not only because of the social services that we do, not only because of the thrift stores and the kettles, but to be the organization that they have spirit about them and they have something about who they are as people that I want to have, that or that, you know, we need to have as a society. We need to be a major player as we partner with local governments and things like that. People, an organization that the cities and the governments will say, we need to hear what the Salvation Army thinks on that thing. We want to be we want to include the Army in all of these things. You know, let's find out what the Army is. And so because we are multifaceted, we have an opportunity to be that in many sorts of ways. You know, yeah, EDS, you know, we have our emergency disaster services. Of course, if something happens, we know our competitive colleagues are always the ones who are on the TV screen and on the cameras. But I think people know that in those situations that the Salvation Army is relevant. I think we want to be for our people, our those who worship here, who are soldiers and adherents. We want to be the holiness movement that God called us into being. We want to be a place where people come and they are able to meet Christ. They are able to grow as disciples. They are able to take their place in a service and worship way in their cores and their communities that actually really impacts our communities. And so we want to be a strong Army. I'd like to see the Army be, you know, to borrow a phrase, I think, from Commissioner Kabaley, we're not the Sal, we are the Salvation Army. And that salvation is key to yet to who we are. And relevant, continuing to be relevant, continuing to be an important piece of the fabric of any community.
Okay, here's one more question that just came up and did not prep you for.
That's okay.
You mentioned all the different facets the Salvation Army is involved in, all these various ministries that we have. Is there one ministry that you think is our greatest opportunity that still needs to truly be unlocked and be bloomed in? If we could just, if that ministry could be nurtured, we would really see a flood of people coming to Jesus, a flood of growth in the Salvation Army. Is there one opportunity that we're on the cusp of?
I think potentially, I think our Pathway of Hope program could do that. And it's interesting because Pathway of Hope is not new. We have a nice new name for it, but it really is the Salvation Army and what we do and how we have done it. But the intentional investment in people's lives has a wonderful opportunity to partner them and couple them with the programming of the Corps, whether it's youth program or women's ministries or men's ministries, whatever that might be. And I, you know, it's closely aligned to social services. You know, we have thousands of people that come at Christmas time and we see, but I think that while that's important, that Pathway of Hope, really intentionally working with those people, partnering them not only with social services, but also with the denominational piece. I think that could be an area we could see our greatest growth. I think closely aligned with that would be our our work with the ARC and our work through Harbor Light. You know, again, we just had the conference, you know, about connecting the ARC and the Corps. That's not the first time we've done that in the Army, but again, a great opportunity to not only help change the trajectory of a person's life from substance abuse to sobriety, but also to bring them in now as a member and to bring them in as a ministry partner and a member of the church community. And so probably those two areas, because we just have such a great opportunity to tap into people, new people that can do that. So that's what I think would be.
Yeah, those are on my mind as well. Great. All right. Any closing thoughts or?
Wow. Thank you for having me. You know, I consider it an honor to be able to share like this. So thank you for having me.
And thank you for making time in your busy divisional director of women's ministries, divisional commander day in the life of.
Thank you. Yeah.
All right. Thanks a lot. Thank you, Lieutenant Colonel Patty, for sharing from your heart and passion to see our church serve Christ through serving others well and with dignity. Listeners, we hope you leave today feeling prepared and equipped for tomorrow. See you next time when I meet with Captain Kelsey Moreno.